The time is now 17 minutes past 7 on Radio Veritas. Good morning, Father Russell.
Good morning, Father Emil.
Good to have you with us again on this beautiful morning. Russell, you know, when the Holy Father goes to, when he flies to other countries, like he's just been to Fatima now, he comes back and on the plane, he often says a lot of things that I think journalists just love tuning into, because he tackles issues which are alive in the world. And this time coming back from Fatima, he touched on things like things with regard to President Trump. He's going to be speaking to President Trump one of these days. And Medjugorje, these are things that have been in the news recently, and sex abuse in the church and so on. Thought you might have a few things to say about Trump, for example.
Yeah, you know, very interesting that you mentioned that, Father Emil. I mean, I think that Pope Francis is generally very good in these press conferences. Some people are a little bit edgy because they feel that he just speaks, because he does not collect questions beforehand. He really wants to have a dialogue, and so he goes into the back of the plane and he just answers questions. I think I've explained before that in Benedict's time, the journalists had to submit the questions to the press spokesman. They would then choose the ones that the Pope would speak about, and then they would go to the back of the plane and the Pope would speak about those questions. But Francis doesn't do that. Mm. He goes to the back of the plane and he takes whatever questions come to him. So he was asked about Donald Trump because there was a big announcement that the Pope was going to meet with Donald Trump, who'll be traveling to Italy. I think it's on the 24th of May or somewhere around there.
Right.
And he was asked, will you meet him? And he said, of course, I never judge a person without listening to them.
Yeah.
And he's hoping that things will emerge from their conversation that will enable them to find doors to talk about things. He said, you know, there are closed doors, maybe, but I need to find the open doors.
Mm-hmm.
He said, on migrants, for example, you already know my opinion. He is the Holy Father's opinion. We know Trump wants to build a wall.
Mm.
But there are always doors, he says, that are not completely closed, and I must look for those doors that are even a little bit open, and you have to go in and talk about what is common and go forward step by step.
Mm.
He spoke about peace, he said, is a handmade and is something that is made each and every day. He spoke about, you know, friendship among people, mutual knowledge, mutual esteem, and really sort of saying that the key thing that he as the Pope can do is respect the other, you know, saying what you think in a very honest way to someone, when you see the gaps to be able to do that. So it struck me that the Pope, in many ways, once again, coming forward as a real diplomat, coming forward as a real world leader, saying, yes, there are differences. You know my opinion on migration. You know Trump's opinion on migration. You know, we don't agree on these matters, but we still have to enter into a dialogue. Going very much as well with the sort of way that this Pope has operated from the beginning. He's always been a man of dialogue, and I think that's very important for us to see.
Well, yes.
On the Medjugorje question as well, he was you know, the whole thing of apparitions at Medjugorje, and he was asked, you know, what's happening about them, because there's been a number of alleged apparitions since the first report in 1981 in that little town in Bosnia Herzegovina, and the Pope has turned to a report that was put out, that was presented by a commission of theologians that was set up by Pope Benedict XVI and headed by the Italian Cardinal Camillo Ruini. And the report came out, and they distinguished between those original apparitions that were the original seers and the later reports of what was the apparitions that have taken place there. So those first apparitions, or the seers, were children, and the report said, you know, we need to look at this, and the church has got questions around that. But on the alleged current apparitions, the report expressed doubt, and the Pope was quite funny, because he, in talking on the aeroplane, he said, personally, I mean, talking about the current apparitions, he said, I prefer the Virgin Mother, not the Virgin who's head of the post office that every day sends a message at a given hour. This is not the Mother of Jesus. These alleged apparitions don't have much value. I say this as a personal opinion. So it's quite interesting that the Holy Father expressing quite strongly his opinion on these matters.
Yes.
So on the alleged current apparitions, because he was going back from Fatima, obviously, at Medjugorje, the Pope sort of seemed to back the report that was given in Pope Benedict's time that presents doubts on the current alleged visions. However, that doesn't stop people from visiting there, because I read the other day that 2.5 million pilgrims still go to Medjugorje every year. So the Pope being quite forthright there as well about Medjugorje. And then I think the real big issue was the question of sex abuse. I mean, a couple of months ago, we know that Mari Collins, I mean, an Irish woman who was on that commission that the Pope set up for the protection of minors, she resigned. And the Pope said that he spoke to her, and she explained the situation to him. He said that on some of the things she was not happy about, she was right. So that was interesting. The Pope said she was right.
Mm-hmm.
He said she's a good woman, and she'll continue to work with priests on training in this very issue of sex abuse. She addressed the accusation, the Pope addressed the accusation that she said there are many cases that are not being dealt with. The Pope admitted that there's been a delay because they were piling up. And he says that, but also they needed to get all this legislation in place. The church had to change a lot of its legislation to allow bishops in the Vatican to act on certain things. And that there's a very good protocol now in every diocese across the world, that the dossiers are being done well. And this is a great advance to trying to combat this great scourge in the church's most recent history. So addressing another very important issue there, and speaking quite freely about the fact that on some of the things that this woman had issues, she was right, that the commission wasn't always functioning as well as what it should have been, and then there are delays that should not have happened. So a very frank conversation from the Holy Father on that flight.
Right, yes. Well, I must say, I'd love to be on those flights just to hear him sharing about these things. And no doubt there were lots of other things that they spoke about as well. But anyway...
Oh, yeah, I mean... The Pope always has throwaway lines about this, that, and the next thing. I mean, there were one-off comments about world peace. He mentioned a few things about atheists. The Pope is he spoke about himself, and he spoke about his own pilgrimage to Fatima, and said that he went there and he asked Mary to forgive him for his mistakes, and also. The mistakes he's made in choosing people that have not always been able to do what he would have liked them to do. He didn't explain which people those were, but he said, I want to ask for forgiveness in my poor taste in choosing people, which I thought was very interesting. And the Pope was also asked about the recent adoption of gay marriage and the decriminalization of abortion in once Catholic Portugal.
Yeah.
And he said there are zones in Italy and Latin America, for example, in which many people are Catholic and at the same time anti-clerical and priest-eaters, he called them, using a colloquial Italian term. And he said, it worries me, but I say again to priests that it's clericalism that divides people and drives people away. And he said that clericalism is a plague in the church. So he spoke about many, many different things on that flight back once again to Rome from Fatima.
Yes. Well, I must say, one of the things I love about Francis is he's just so down to earth and honest, isn't he?
Yeah, and if you watch him, I mean, I don't understand Italian, unfortunately, but if you watch him, sometimes you get little video clips, like, for example, on Rome Reports, and you watch him talking to the journalist. It's a very friendly, open, dialogical style where there's jokes and there's laughing. And,
yes.
and you really get the feel that the Holy Father is having a conversation.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
He's not just answering questions like a press conference, but you feel that he's having a conversation. And it makes some people nervous that he'll say something and then he'll kind of backtrack on that and say it in another way because he's speaking off the cuff.
Right.
But there's a great humanity to that. There's a great sense of you getting the real deal. And sometimes when he stumbles over things or corrects himself, you can see that the Pope himself, is thinking this thing through.
Right.
He's not a man who claims to have all the answers, but in dialogue, you can see how his thought process is happening as well, and how the conversation is helping him to think things through.
Mm. All right, well, thank you for those reflections, Russell. Let's move on to some local things here.
I must just tell you one thing, Tom. Emma. Yes. I investigated, just as an aside, I investigated the possibilities of flying on that paper plane. And you've got to have a lot of money, because even though you're sitting in economy class, I think tickets are way more expensive than what you'd normally pay for economy class.
Yes, I suppose just to be on that plane and to be able to ask those questions and report on them. Hey?
Exactly. Yes.
Russell, listen, one of the big issues in South Africa at the moment is the issue of religion in public schools. And, you know, we live in a country where there's just so much crime and violence. There seems to be no moral compass anymore. And now they want to take religion out of public schools. Are we going to go deeper and deeper into the mire?
You know, it's a very interesting question, because one would have thought this would be one of the peripheral issues in South Africa today.
Mm.
The lead story in the Daily Maverick today is all about state capture. And, you know, basically the first paragraph talks about how we're not even being enraged anymore the more we find out how much the state is captured or how deeply the state is captured. And so trade union solidarity has argued in the Gauteng High Court that looking for a banning of religious practices in schools, which it seems would affect around 24,000 schools in South Africa.
Mm.
And they're saying that the case is of major importance to hundreds of thousands of parents and children across the country, and it's requesting the court to ban any religious practice at schools, which runs counter to the conviction that 95% of South Africans identify themselves with some sort of religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
So one, you know, one really wonders what's going through the trade union's mind that this now has become a major, major issue. And you will find in many religious schools, you know, that they are quite accommodating. You know, even in some, you know, of the Christian schools, you got Muslim pupils going, and so even though the ethos of the school be Christian, they're very respectful to those who are Muslim. On a Friday, they allow the Muslim kids to go to the mosque and things like that. So, you know, one does wonder where this is coming from and what political agenda is at play. Civil organizations have justified their decision to challenge this, the right of schools to use Christian or religious practices as well.
Mm.
So, for example, the Organization for Religious Education and Democracy is challenging the Christian-focused culture of such schools, saying that they violate the policy on religion and so forth. But you know, it seems to me at the moment that this is just such a peripheral issue, and given the state of affairs in the country, one would have thought that the energies of the court and the energies of trade union and the energies of the Organization for Religion, Education, and Democracy would be focused on, you know, the pertinent issues of the day. And we know that education in this country, in schools, is messy, because, you know, teachers are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, especially in rural schools. And pupils are not coming to school on time. Many parents don't care. Many of those schools are under-resourced, and it seems that they've just been forgotten or left by government departments. It seems to me that those would be much more crucial issues to look at before one starts to fight about religion.
Mm.
So I really wonder what agenda is at work where.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, if I were to throw in the conspiracy theory, you know, is this because people like the Anglican Archbishop have been so vocal towards or about issues around corruption? I mean, is there someone in government is saying, or someone in these places that's saying, let's try and get back at these people and shut them up? Drive them out. I don't know. But, you know, one does wonder what really is behind this.
That's right, yeah. No, indeed. Well, thank you for those comments, Russell. And we can go on a lot more about that. But the other big issue at the moment in South Africa is Brian Molefe going back to Eskom.
Well, yeah, I mean, honest to you. You know, talk about being brazen.
Mm.
You know, it seems quite clear that Molefe resigned. I went back to look at that letter that Molefe wrote, the tear letter. I don't know if you remember the day he was crying on TV.
That's right.
Public protector said, you know, you're implicated in state capture, you're implicated with the Guptas. We need to go back and remember that's where the whole joke of Saxonwold, Shabin, because he said, oh no, he's never visited the Guptas, because the public protector said he'd been there a number of times, he'd been traced. He said he was at a Shabin in Saxon World near the Guptas. He'd never gone to the Guptas. There's a big cloud of corruption over his head. He then writes a letter where he resigns from ESCOM. Mm-hmm. The word resign is used. Huh? It's not that he's quitting. Or he says that he resigned. He resigned not on request for early retirement, and it was definitely a retrenchment. It was a resignation. Mm-hmm. The letter's clear.
Right.
So, a couple of months later, Molefe goes to Parliament. It then emerges that Molefe resigns from ESCOM, goes to Parliament, hoping to be finance minister.
Yeah.
People in the ANC and other structures, they manage to turn things in such a way that the pressure is put on the president. Molefe is never made finance minister.
Mm-hmm.
Molefe has been waiting for his 30 million rand from ESCOM. The ESCOM board says yes. No, he can get his 30 million rand. The minister says no, he can't. There's political turmoil about this. So Molefe quits Parliament and now goes back to ESCOM.
Mm.
The public protector's report is still under review. That's not been finalized, in which he is strongly implicated for crooked deals with the Guptas.
Mm.
The 30 million rand, he worked there for 18 months or something, or however long it was.
Yeah.
There was somebody, I can't remember the name, there was a senior person in ESCOM who after 27 years didn't get half of 30 million as a payout.
Mm.
But he was going to get 30 million for the short period that he worked there.
Mm.
I mean, the whole thing smacks of dishonesty and corruption and just inefficiency. And here, we in South Africa have this man back in one of the key positions, because what you have to understand is that ESCOM is not just about generating electricity. They have deals with various coal mines, because what happens is these coal mines supply ESCOM's power stations so that they can generate power.
Mm.
Some of those mines are now Gupta-owned. So you just see what a web of deceit and a web of corruption is involved in this whole thing. And then you've got people at ESCOM, some staff, not all staff, are giving him a hero's welcome. Once again, how we've put people who have got questionable, histories, questionable practices in terms of corruption, how we put them on a sort of pedestal. And how we kind of give these people a place in society where I say to myself, what are young people thinking when they hear and see all this? What are young people thinking?
Yeah.
What is the example that's being set?
Yeah.
Really, really not a very good story, and certainly not good for the country.
Absolutely. And of course, it just makes a big joke of Parliament. I mean, being sworn in as a minister and then just couple of days afterwards being sworn out, or however he left Parliament to go back to ESCOM.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Mm. I saw somebody the other day, I can't remember if it was in the Star or somebody wrote, this little crybaby, I didn't get what I want, so I'll leave, type of thing. Sort of childish way of dealing with this.
Mm.
But, I mean, whether he should have gone to Parliament, I think, in the first place, is another big question.
Exactly.
I mean, this once again was quite clearly part of the Zuma plan to put this man in. And rumors were that he was being, that once Pravin Gordhan was shafted, he was going to be the finance minister.
Right.
But, people in the ANC managed to control Zuma and say, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually he doesn't put the man in.
Yeah.
What happens? The fellow goes back to where he was.
Yeah,
back to the very place where he cried and resigned, where there were strong, allegations of corruption. And we need to remember the person behind these allegations is kind of a South African icon. It's a former public protector, Tuli Madonsela.
Uh-huh.
So, and that report is still under review. That report has not been finalized about the Guptas and Tegete, the coal mine and ESCOM and how Molefe, cut corners for them and all sorts of things.
Mm.
It's a very sad state of affairs.
Really
sad. This is the sense that, there's a story told about how, when you want to bring down an elephant, you put a little bug gets into the elephant's stomach and it just slowly chews away at the wall, and eventually you know, chew through the lining, and eventually it damages the stomach of the elephant, and eventually it'll bring the elephant down.
Mm.
And sometimes one does wonder whether all these little things are a bit like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, electricity continues to function,
mm-hmm.
but at what point is everything going to crash down because of the corruption, because of the mismanagement, because of the deceit and the lies, and just the immoral atmosphere that seems to permeate so much of our public life?
That's right. Russell, we've gone way over time. Anything quick about the Jesuit Institute?
I think just once again to remind people that Father Thomas Weston will be coming to South Africa. He arrived at the end of June. He'll be here for July. He'll be going around the country, Johannesburg, Port Elizabeth, Durban. He'll also be a day in Cape Town talking about finding God in addiction and recovery, pastoral responses, so helping us to look at how we can respond to addiction. We know that drugs are a major scourge in many of our poorer communities. We often hear stories about Nyope. We hear how some of the most terrible crimes in the country are committed often by people who are high on drugs. But it's not just drugs. I mean, I think that people get addicted to alcohol and to pornography and to gambling and to all sorts of things, mm-hmm. and even addiction to social media. So Father Weston will be talking about how we as pastoral ministers can respond to the question of addiction. What are the ways that we may be able to help people? So this is open to anybody, to priests and to lay people who are involved in the areas of addiction. And Father Weston will be offering 3 days of talks, as we normally do. But this year we've added on in Port Elizabeth and in Durban, he'll be offering also weekend retreats. So from Friday night to Sunday lunch, he'll be offering a retreat for those who are struggling with addiction, or maybe family members of people who are addicted and they're not sure where to go and they're feeling hopeless, or even just pastoral ministers who feel that they need to go and reflect on this, who will be offering those retreats. So all that information is available on the website of the Jesuit Institute. Very easy, jesuitinstitute.org.za. Or they can also contact the Jesuit Institute. Simple thing, emailing Ursula van Nierop, who is dealing with all the information around Winter Living Theology. And she is at admin@jesuitinstitute.org.za.
Good. All right, Russell, thank you very much indeed. It's always lovely talking to you, and thank you for your comments this morning.
Thank you, Father Emil.
God bless you, and have a super day.
You too. All the best.
Thank you so much.